hi, my name is Lily Padilla. I am originally from Taos, New Mexico. I attended New Mexico Highlands University, and I am a graphic designer and illustrator.
I'm Natasha. I also went to Highlands, and I graduated in May 2020.
Well, I'm Chris. I also graduated in 2020, and I got a BFA in Media Arts with a concentration in Visual Communication, and I also got a BA in English.
Hi, my name's Gabriella Smith. I go by Gabby, and I'm currently a student at Highlands. I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Welcome to Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. This show is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. You just heard three recent graduates and one current student of New Mexico Highlands University Media Arts and Technology Program. Gabby is currently working towards an MFA in Visual Communications and a degree in English. New Mexico Highlands University is located in Las Vegas, New Mexico. A project within the university called New Mexico's Center for Cultural Technology is a partnership between the Department of Media Arts and Technology and the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs. CCT's mission is to cultivate a homegrown talent pool of multimedia specialists capable of working with cultural content and committed to serving their communities. Since 2005, they've placed over 200 interns in museums, libraries, historic sites, and parks across New Mexico and the Southwest, creating over 300 projects in video and audio, exhibits, graphic design, mobile apps, websites, and more. Here's Colette LaBeouf talking with Chris, Gabby, Natasha, and Lily.
So I'm interested in, you're all involved through the same program, right? And so could one of you give us sort of an overview of what the program is at Highlands?
Who wants to take over? I can do it. So the program we all have attended and got our degrees in, or getting our degrees in because Gabby's still in school right now, is the Media Arts and Technology program. With Highlands, it's one of the majors or minors that you could get. And before COVID, we were all very tight as just creatives and friends. So we always could like work with each other and like ask for help or get new ideas or share ideas with each other and give feedback. Mm-hmm. And with the program, you can do many things. You can go for graphic design, become an illustrator, work in multimedia interactivity, videography, photography, and many more things. There's lots of equipment that you could use from there that they let you use. And even with now with COVID, you can go check those things out, even if you're just taking a class with them. So like if you were in videography, you could have the camera gear, the microphone gear, the lighting setup.
Cool.
Stuff like that.
It sounds great. And then an internship, tell us how the internship works. Maybe another one of you can talk about how these internships work, because you all have had them or have them.
Sure, I can talk about those.
Okay.
So it's usually kind of like they come up every semester. And you put in an application, and then Lauren will usually pair you with a job that she thinks fits your skill set.
Okay.
Or you can kind of just like pick one out. Like if you really want to learn something new, or you're just getting into like a new skill, you can do that as well. I know a few years back, I had just taken a web coding class to start doing like some web design. And I picked a web design focused internship to help strengthen those newly acquired skills.
That's so great. So, and how long are the internships?
It depends on the semester. Usually for the summer, it's like June and July, so they're 2 months. And then over the fall and spring semester, they're 16 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is great. So all of you have had one or have one? Currently, and you also shared with me, and I'm going to ask you to talk about it, shared with me what is the project you're working on now. And I think, you know, for people listening, I think this is so interesting. The work you're doing to contribute to what's happening right now with cultural programming, with the arts, with museums and cultural institutions. So I'm going to ask you again to take turns sharing with us What's your project and also what's exciting about it to you?
Yeah, I'm working with the Manitos Community Memory Project, and me and Lily are working together to create booklets that they collect interviews that have to deal with COVID-19 and the Spanish flu. And those people are just talking about them. And Lily's mainly doing the type and publication part, and I'm illustrating.
Okay. And is this based somewhere? Where in New Mexico? Is it statewide?
Yeah, because Manitos is from southern Colorado to northern New Mexico.
Okay.
It has to deal with all of those communities.
Okay. And so what's it like working on the project?
It's a lot of fun, actually. I mean, I love illustrating, and so I just have a lot of fun doing that.
Mm-hmm. And Lily, you're working on the writing part?
Yeah, so with the content that I've been given with the interviews, I've been taking that and using that text and made it into publication for the booklets.
Mm-hmm.
There's various booklets. So I've just been taking that, and some of them isn't just like, you know, like just written text. Some of them are lists. Sometimes they can be obituaries.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, yeah, I've just been making sure I can arrange the text and create some publication that can be published.
And so what are you guys learning about this?
I would say the experiences that people have had while they're in the pandemic, because not everyone has the same experience, especially being with one, like one is a grandfather, and how he, like, because he takes care of his great-grandkids and still has his time with his wife, mm-hmm. and manages that while also still working, and just kind of understanding like how people live their lives with this pandemic. And not only that, like new information to me about the Spanish flu, or like what people heard or had gathered from like past family members, or just their knowledge of this, of these pandemics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just like the sharing experience.
And what are the illustrations like, Natasha?
They have to do with like sometimes icons in New Mexico and Colorado.
Okay.
Like, I know one of them is Doña Sebastiana.
Okay.
And others is like a journalist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what languages are these accounts in?
Spanish. Some of them, like the obituaries, are in Spanish and English.
Okay.
But then some of them, like the interviews, are in English.
And is translation a part of this project too?
They're transcribed before.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Yeah, they're transcribed okay. before.
Okay. Sounds really cool. So then how are the booklets made available to audiences? How do people have access to them who are interested?
Once they're finalized and that they're done and ready, they should be on the Manitos Community Memory Project website.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
But right now we're just in the final stages as of right now, just kind of finalizing and making sure everything is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds really cool and important, historic, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's about actually recording what's happening, not only in the past, but noticing how the past is also now, right?
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Very cool. All right, Chris. What are you working on?
I'm working with NMAM, the New Mexico Association of Museums, to redo their logo. And also I'm helping them like finalize some conference materials for their upcoming conference next month.
Yeah, November, right?
Yeah. Beginning of November.
Yeah.
And I'm also working with the Las Vegas CCHP, the Citizens Committee for Historic Preservation.
Okay.
Yeah, they have this like mobile app that they've been working on, and it needs some interface
mm-hmm.
revisions.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And what's exciting to you about working on these projects, or what do you really enjoy about them?
I really love the process, and I also love to see just like the transformation, like looking at from like going from where you started to seeing the end product is always really exciting,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially with the app, like I've changed a lot of things on it, and it seems a lot easier to use now than it did before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very cool. All right. And Gabby?
Yeah, so my internship is currently with the Bradbury Science Museum, which is part of LANL, Los Alamos National Laboratory. And I started with them over the summer, and I basically had kind of two little smaller projects. One was creating a character that would kind of guide visitors throughout their supercomputing exhibit. And it was based off of a little vacuum tube named Tubi. So I kind of got to basically just personify a vacuum tube, which is really fun. I love doing that kind of stuff. And then the second thing I did was animate and put together a video on quantum computing. Okay. And it kind of goes over basics of quantum computing, and then kind of how it's different from like binary computing and like, you know, just regular supercomputing. So I did that, and then right now I'm currently working with them again. So I'm working on two other smaller animations that illustrate like the difference between computer power versus like speed. So
okay, wow.
That was Colette LaBeouf talking with Chris Romero, Lily Padilla, Gabriela Smith, and Natasha Vasquez. When we come back, more from the students about how they use technology and art to support the voices around them. We're listening today to Black Taffy. In his 2020 album, Opal Wand, the Dallas composer and producer conjures up memories to create eerie, mystical pieces. The tracks on Opal Wand were recorded between Texas and Brazil. At the top, we heard a bit of Casting Glamours. And before the break, here's Cardinal Advice. Stay with us. Welcome back to TCA Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. Colette LaBeouf has been talking with three recent graduates and one current student of New Mexico Highlands University Media Arts and Technology Program. All the students have had internships through the Center for Cultural Technology. Here's Chris Romero describing what he's learned so far with his work.
The internships have shown me that it's super important to to tell your story through your work, but also to help others tell their stories, because not everyone has that opportunity. And through art and design, you can kind of really help elevate these stories that kind of get pushed to the back.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something I really want to like incorporate into my work moving forward and really
wonderful.
Focus on.
That's great. So accessibility, inclusion, elevating voices.
Yeah, so honestly, I really agree with Chris. I think, you know, just personally for me, this internship really just kind of helped me just sort of expand my horizon and kind of figure out what I want to do and like kind of try new things and challenge myself. You know, I kind of started off with graphic design being my main thing, but I learned animation and I really liked it. So when this came up, I was kind of nervous because I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be good enough for it. But just getting to do it's given me so much experience, and it's just helped me realize that I really just love doing like kind of a little bit of everything. I like dabbling in all of it. So just for that reason, it's really helped me kind of figure out where I want to go from here. I really love working with museums. I think this whole process has kind of just taught me that I want to work either with like nonprofits or museums, kind of like Chris said, that need help getting their voices out or need them amplified. And I think education is just super, super important. It's a basis for kind of everything. So if I can, whatever I can do with my art basically to help that and educate as many people as possible is basically what I'm going to try and do. So.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Working with the Manitos, they really showed me because like how much I liked illustrating, because like I've always liked drawing, but I never really thought of it as like a way to get a job. And even before that, I got the internship, I was mainly just doing 3D modeling, and so it showed me that I can combine both.
And so I'm curious, before, let's just say before the internship or before school even, were you drawing?
I was.
And you were just drawing for yourself or,
Yeah, just for classes.
Yeah. So it changed kind of the purpose of it.
Yeah.
Lily.
I think one thing for me that's been great about working with Manitos is that these publications will not only just be for people, but for educators as well. We're kind of talking right now about creating stuff for educators, but these books can be used for educators as well. And just kind of learning more knowledge about a place that I've, you know, grown up in and, you know, more understanding more of the community and its history. So I think that's what I like about this. And that I'm able to use the skills and abilities that I've majored and got my degree in to help with this project.
So how would you define cultural technology? And definitely this is not a test. I'm just interested in, especially for people who are unfamiliar with it, what does that phrase mean? And either in terms of ideas or in terms of application or practicality?
I would say that cultural technology, you know, it's taking the technology aspect and creating material that shows and culturalizes everything that is surrounding. Or just even its basic history that we learn, or sometimes we just don't learn about until later, until we utilize that material. I've in the past I've worked with the historic sites, and we've had to do projects with them. And an example is like Natasha had done some work with, I'm pretty sure, with some 3D modeling for the historic sites. Did you, Natasha? I think you did.
I was drawing.
Oh, you drew. But like, you know, creating 3D modeling of artifacts, that way no one touches them, but you can still see and how they looked, or like understand what those objects were and what they meant. So just kind of keeping those like artifacts, like things like that, like be able to display that but not have them damaged. Is one thing, so keeping the quality of that, but also keeping what is there alive and being able to have accessibility and share that with others.
I
think to me it's kind of like this, I don't know, we're using technology to, again, like help these people tell the, like surface these stories. Like when we worked, we actually all worked on a PICT project. And we worked with the HEMA's historic site to help them redo their visitor center.
Okay.
And there we implemented a lot of like projection technology to help them better utilize the small space that we had. So cultural technology is kind of like this meshing between like cutting edge or like emergent technology and kind of like this old, like older, like cultural identity, trying to help express it in new ways.
Right. Okay, that makes a lot of sense also. And especially with that example, I can see, I mean, you're trying to help institutions also be visible, right?
Yeah.
In this way of having old ways of doing things. And I know, you know, not all museums are cutting edge.
Yeah.
Or historic sites are cutting edge, primarily because of their capacity, right? Mm-hmm. Or where they are, or their communities. Or also not wanting to interfere with their space in some ways or change too much. So I could see how bringing in new technology would allow that.
Yeah. And before COVID, it like helped bring new tourism. Mm-hmm. And that was another thing is sometimes, you know, areas are neglected with tourism. And that just kind of brought a new aspect of having people learn and come see this culture and values that they have. Mm-hmm. And share that with others, like share their story inside and perspective and what they do to preserve that. Mm-hmm. Which was like great to see.
And so you guys all worked on that project together?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, cool. Who wants to go next? Let's see. Gabby?
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah. So I think honestly it's kind of just like a nice little like union between kind of the humanities and just being creative, and then a little bit of technology in there too.
You guys have a lot of technology.
Yeah.
Don't sell yourself short there.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I guess it's kind of just, I guess what I really like about it is that we get to you know, study and work really hard and learn all these like new things and learn how to be creative and use the technology. And then we get to just go out and use that to help other people and basically just use it for good, which kind of just like two things that work really well together. It's that you may not necessarily expect it at first, but we kind of can just come in and help in like any situation or with any type of group. And it's like really flexible.
Make things work and connect things for people that can't. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious, for me, seeing the work you do, I mean, obviously you must work a lot in your own spaces, in your own homes, or in the spaces you have elsewhere. I don't know, like if there are places you have to go to work, but what has the pandemic for you been like in terms of changing both your study and your work, your internship work?
It's mainly changed where I work.
Okay.
Because I still have a desktop from the labs. They let me have one, we'll borrow one, and a Wacom tablet. So I used to go like to the Media Arts building every day.
That was like your second home.
Yeah.
And is that true for all of you?
Oh, yeah. I don't know when we weren't there at that point.
Yeah. Well,
there's different labs there, and you could utilize those labs in different ways. And some of them are studios and stuff like that. So we would all be there, and if we weren't in the same rooms, we'd at least know where the other would be. And so just being in a different workplace has affected that.
Mm-hmm.
Although, like, we can't be, like, with each other, we still, like, call each other all the time.
I was just going to say, are you guys, even if you're not working on the same project at the same time, are you all staying connected?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I would say we are. Yeah, we have Zooms on Thursdays, and sometimes whenever we just have, like, what feedback on a project we're working on, we'll send each other our projects and just be like, what do you think?
I mean, I can imagine, as much as the four of you are helping institutions and helping the community through your work, you're helping each other.
Hey, this is the first of three videos that will show you how to do a stop-motion animation. In this video, I will show you how to make a bee using three different mediums, clay, paper, and found objects. This bee will be used as the main character of your stop motion. For people who are not comfortable drawing or modeling with clay, I made printable cutouts you can color or help you make the shapes with the clay. I will start by showing you how to make a bee from found objects. You will need an egg carton, a cereal box, toothpicks, earbuds.
You just heard Natasha Vasquez from a video series she created about stop-motion animation as part of her cultural technology internship program through New Mexico Center for Cultural Technology. She spent 6 weeks working with Santa Fe Children's Museum to create a series of stop animation projects called We Be Buzzin'. See the whole video, How to Make a Bee, at santafechildrensmuseum.org. Colette LaBeouf is continuing her conversation with graduates and a current student of New Mexico Highlands University. Two of them, Chris and Gabby, have a dual focus, adding an English degree to their work in the Media Arts and Technology program. They tell us how including English in their studies actually complements and enriches their work.
How does the English, studying of English, fit or not fit for you?
Yeah, so I think for me, I've always really liked English. I just grew up reading and writing a lot. And then, you know, once I kind of got into this, I was like, I kind of thought that English was like a separate thing that I would just kind of do at the same time. And then one of my classes last year, I basically had to come up with like all of the copywriting for it, like the name, title, like taglines for advertising. And it kind of just clicked that it was like really similar. So I kind of decided that I wanted to focus on both of them because I think it's kind of hard to do like any creative work without kind of the writing because the message is kind of like one of the most important parts.
Thank
you.
So
if you kind of can master that, then it'll kind of really clear into your design. So that's what I think.
I love it. Okay, Chris.
I got into English because I love linguistics. But I never imagined that it would mesh so well with like graphic design, and it does.
Yeah. So interesting. Well, as I'm listening to all of you, I mean, you're talking about creating publications, right? You're talking about making things accessible, listening to people's histories or accounts of experiences, or making science translatable to another audience. It's all a kind of writing, even through the illustration. It's talking to people. That's interesting to me that what you're doing is so varied, even if it is a specific project. And also the level of collaboration, it sounds like you're all engaged in, not only with each other, but with whoever you're working with, whatever project. I'm sure there's a lot of opportunity to work with others and to find ways to do that.
Yeah, and that's like the one experience coming with the department that you get is that with the PICT project, when I'm working with the Hemet Springs historic site, that gave us like a clientele experience, which, you know, you don't really get like experiences with work fields, like not often while you're sure. in school.
Sure.
So I think that brought in a new light working with and just being in the department that we were in or that we are in mm-hmm. right now mm-hmm. is gaining more experience while you're still attending school and are in classes and still learning. So understanding how to work with clients and like what works and what doesn't work and the things to ask mm-hmm. while doing work for them.
Yeah, I think that's huge. That's an amazing experience to learn. I want to ask if you were talking to high school students or younger, you know, about what you're learning, what you're doing, the value of it, or if you were talking to students who are interested in these areas, graphic design, illustration, working with coding, things like that, what advice would you have for these younger students?
I would say any opportunity to utilize any skills or skills you want to learn, take that. Don't let anyone hold that encouragement back. That'll work in your favor. The things that I didn't think I would get a job in, I did get a job in ultimately. Mm-hmm. And even in school, I was told, like, you know, drawing won't get you anywhere. It does. You don't have to listen to everyone about the advice that anyone that is older than you tells you or that any professional will tell you. You do what you do. You do what you can and you chase it.
Yeah, I think I would give similar advice because I also didn't think that I could ever turn art into a viable career, and now I have. Mm-hmm. And I just think, like, if you work hard enough and you just, you know, you have passion and like drive, you can make it work.
Natasha?
I would say to like never stop learning, because my drawing in high school has always gotten better, and just keep trying and learning and experiencing to get better and better.
And Gabby?
I would say just don't limit yourself. Honestly, anything is possible. I think kind of growing up, what my mom would tell me that is, as long as you have like a passion and a drive and you love what you're doing, like you'll find your way through, and you'll get to where you need to be. You'll figure it out. Like everything will kind of fall into place. Just, you know, stay motivated and work hard and you'll get there. Yeah.
And you still have your art. You still have, I mean, this thing that you started from, right, which wasn't connected to work. Your capacity or your interest in something visual or written or graphic design or illustration, that's there from the start. So that doesn't go away. It's just wonderful that suddenly it goes with work. Well, you guys are amazing. This is seriously inspiring. You guys are inspiring. And I love hearing about your projects, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
That was Chris Romero, Lily Padilla, Gabriella Smith, and Natasha Vasquez talking with Colette LaBeouf. Check out more about the Center for Cultural Technology, a partnership between New Mexico Highlands University and the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, at cctnewmexico.org. When we come back, we'll hear from Gina Azari. Stay with us. To TCA Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. We're continuing our conversation about cultural communication, digital media, and their place in our world with Gina Azari, a graphic designer who has been living and working in Taos since 1993. Azari came from California with a few entertainment industry clients. She now creates print and digital graphics for primarily local artists and arts organizations, one of those organizations being Taos Center for the Arts. I talked with Gina on day one of the election. Why design? How'd you get into it?
I was always into design, as far as I can remember. Always an art student since day one, since I was a child. My father was a designer, and I think I learned through him to examine everything in my environment. He was a production designer, and every time we'd go out, he'd touch surfaces and wallpaper and treatments and talk about architecture, and I think I learned to do that through him.
Would you say that you had kind of grand ideas about going into graphic design, and then did you? Or
I did not have some big grand idea, although when I was in college, well, I was unfocused. I went to many junior colleges before I figured out that I wanted to finish. I took graphic design paste-up classes at Santa Monica City College. I think that print always appealed to me. When I was in high school, I dreamed about having a magazine. I don't know where that came from so much, but I do think I'm attracted to two-dimensional design. I always loved magazines. My dad always had architectural and design magazines.
As I've mentioned, we talked with recent graduates and current students of New Mexico Highlands University Media Arts and Technology program. And one of the things they discussed was how through art and design, they could help people tell their stories. I think what they were talking about is that taking ideas for projects or taking an exhibit and then communicating something about that exhibit to other people, a lot of times that falls to someone who's not necessarily involved in the making of this object or this project. It falls to the person who is then going to communicate about this object or project or idea or whatever to all the masses of people. And for them, they describe that as helping people tell their stories.
I suppose I'm one of those people where I'm a third party coming in. I'm not involved in the programming with what's handed to me. I see it after it's handed to me. It's interesting because the people you interviewed who I haven't met are very young and are native to technology. And I'm 55, and this is all, you know, I'm still learning. I still have a love-hate relationship with it. It's so interesting. I'm curious to hear their interview because they will have such a different perspective. For me, as a third party, I want to understand what went into the programming and what it's about. And so sometimes I will research what it is. But absolutely, at least for me, I'm a very visual person. You know, and it's my job to make something look beautiful visually, to compel you to even stop and look at it, but also to communicate what it is, what this program is, and why you should want to see it.
So I guess I wonder, do you have a special process that you go through in order to relate to these programs that you don't have anything to do with in terms of designing, thinking about? How do you then take that information and then create something visual to communicate to others about it? Or is that just part of the natural thing that happens with you? Or is there something special that you could describe with how you do that?
It depends on the client. I ask a lot of questions. I used to have a form that asked about audience, and who are you trying to appeal to, and things like that. With arts-oriented stuff, and especially with clients I have a relationship with, I have some idea. For example, The Revolutionists was a play I had to make graphics for. I knew nothing about it, had never heard of it. I Googled it and thought, wow, this is cool. This is about some feminist activist women during the French Revolution. Awesome. I knew nothing about it, and it compelled me, but also that helped me to figure out visually what I wanted to convey and looked up a bunch of portraits from that era. Things like that.
What do you do when you look up something and you're kind of bored by it and you don't care about it? I mean, you still have to make a graphic about it.
You know, it does happen. It happened more when now I have primarily arts clients. When it's either an artist I really don't love, or I'll just use something safer. Like, you know, I had to do a hotel logo and the owner was just mean and he was dismissive and I didn't care about, you know, marketing a hotel. It was a tough one, but, you know, sometimes you don't have the luxury of picking and choosing. And in his case, he knew everything already, and he told me what he wanted in the logo. And so I followed direction. And then at that point, it's just production. It has nothing to do with my expertise or my talent. It has to do with appeasing someone because you need the job, honestly.
Okay.
Did I answer that?
Yes, totally. All right, let's go back. You mentioned technology, and we know that these young people that are just coming out of these programs, they're not only working in design, but they're working in thinking about the different technologies that are available now. You grew up with magazines, print, 2D.
Yes.
I don't know, do you have a feeling about whether or how technology has had an impact on our consumption or relation to art and the way we look at it?
Well, a few things come to mind there. One, you know, we live in a very fairly isolated rural New Mexican town. And I feel like I'm pretty out of it in terms of whatever these students are learning right now. I have such a limited exposure to what's new and exciting. However, I go to museums around the country and out of the country, and I see what other people are doing, and I'm so envious. I have to imagine that, you know, major museums have incredible resources and have access to things I've never heard of before. So I don't feel qualified to talk about it, except that I can enjoy some things from this rural area in terms of what comes to mind is that Tate Modern in London had a video. They posted a video of a David Hockney show, and it was unbelievable. They did a beautiful job. It wasn't just them walking through. It was rich, and they cut in with all different kinds of things, interviews and stuff, and close-ups, and I think audio with David. And I know that's very limited to probably what those students are talking about, but it helps me to experience something from Taos that I would have never in a million years.
You said you work in, you use the term static. And when you see these things, do you think, oh, I wish I could do that, or I wish I was working? It's not a one person creating those. There's probably a team of people creating those. I wonder.
I have a love-hate thing with that because I don't like learning anything new anymore. Yes, I see things. I'm like, oh, I wish I knew how to do that. But also, you know, I found a spot where I'm pretty happy where I am in terms of what I know how to do and what I can present.
Yeah.
And not a lot of is asked of me in terms of doing something like that, like a fancy online animation or, I would love to, but I don't have the patience anymore. It's a bad answer. But.
Well, when it comes to design, graphic or otherwise, either you in your work or you just as somebody in the world that enjoys and thinks about these things, like what's something exciting for you now? Or is there anything, or what's something recently that you've been thinking about or that you've come across?
Do you get really excited just going out and seeing art? My dream vacation is just going to a bunch of museums. Really, I could just do it all day, every day.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I think if you asked me, when you think about theater, what's exciting for you right now in theater? And I'd be like, I don't know, but I would love to go and see a bunch of plays. So I'd have the same kind of answer. Yeah, no, so that makes total sense.
It's just about feeding your eyes and ears. And, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other day, you know, I'm so down about theater because it's in many ways just impossible. So I think about design right now and what it means for everybody on the computer spending all this time consuming all this stuff on a screen. And I don't know if that's like exciting, challenging, or just like, oh man.
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, virus wise, what I do isn't as different.
Yeah.
Although because my clients are mostly arts organizations and like TCA has performances, the things that I'm making materials for are not in person.
Well, I think a little bit about when we were doing work together before all this, there's the print flyer. And I know that making a graphic for a screen and making a graphic for print, there's not like a huge gulf of difference between those two things, but I imagine there's some difference.
Well, that's very true. There is absolutely no print going on right now because there's no humans to give it to. And yeah, that is actually a huge change. I mean, things were going more digital anyway because print is prohibitively expensive generally, depending on what you're doing. Things were going digital anyway, but now that there's no humans to hand it to, you might actually snail mail a mailer, a postcard, a rat card to someone. But now we're so dependent on social media to get the word out, or a newsletter, an e-newsletter, that it's a very different feeling. I think people just know. I think just society knows now.
Is that kind of a bummer for you? Do you prefer print? Is that something that you're, or doesn't?
There's something satisfying about holding an actual piece. However, making digital is much more immediate. You do it, you're done, it's right there in front of you. You don't have to wait for a printer, and there's no room for error in the printing process and waiting for it to ship and all that.
So one of the things that one of the students said, which I found interesting, was that they're on the positions now where they're doing internships. And one of the young women, she loves to draw, and she's always loved to draw. And as she was coming up in school, drawing all the time, everybody told her, you can't make money with your art. You can't make money drawing. And she's like, well, look at me. I'm drawing, essentially, and I'm working. So it is possible.
It's amazing that she kept doing it, even though she had that input. I mean, absolutely. I had that kind of input.
Did you?
Absolutely. or just those things are for other people. You can't do that. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And to keep doing that says a lot. To keep doing whatever it is that you love.
Speaking of having people around you telling you you can't do this or you're not good enough. So you've said you had a crisis of confidence at one time during your career. What was that about? Can you share?
I would say most of my adult life has been like that. I've been in and out of different things. I had a cool shop. I've been doing graphics for a long time, since my early 20s. And, you know, I was sidetracked having a daughter and a shop and different things that come in and out of life. I've always had a crisis of confidence, just since I can remember. And it's interesting, and I'm not really sure how I got out of it, but I think it has to do with age. I think you come to a point in middle age, at least for me, that I just didn't care anymore. I stopped caring what people think. I did it anyway, for the most part. And I think also I found myself in a place where I had the luxury to turn down work I didn't want to do. That was a huge breakthrough to be able to start to say no. I struggled with that forever. And then very slowly, as I was doing graphics, started realizing, oh, I don't have to do the things I don't love. I was okay financially that I was able to pick and choose. And, you know, it's taken me many years, but now I have all arts-related clients, and it's so much more fulfilling that way. It really is.
So you have an interest in encaustic painting?
Yes.
Why?
I love it. There's something very meaty about it. It's almost like when you bite into a piece of cheese. It's like visually meaty. I don't know how to describe that. And also it's got this very satisfying visual cloudiness to it. So you can do all these layers and there's so much depth. And I'm interested in image transfer. And,
can you describe encaustic painting?
Oh, it's heated wax. I'm using beeswax and Damar resin, and I'm learning. I'm teaching myself. I really know nothing. So I'm watching YouTube videos, and I have a couple of actual physical books. And, you know, it's a mess. It's just very satisfying. You put a layer of wax on, and then you heat it up to seal it to what was underneath, and it's very satisfying. It's like playing with a candle or... Yeah, it changes visually as it melts and it bleeds into what was underneath it or next to it.
So that's kind of interesting to me because it seems like there's a level of or an aspect of not having control about what the wax does and how it moves and the heat and all that, and which is like completely the opposite thing in terms of like designing a 2D graphic for...
That's true. That's absolutely true. And I'm a control freak.
And you're a control freak, which I happen to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It takes a lot of patience. I've ruined a lot of things, or you just can melt it all off and start over, which is kind of satisfying. It is. It's completely unpredictable. And if you haven't used the material before, you don't know what it's going to do, and it might do something totally different than you thought. Yeah, it's definitely satisfying for me to be away from the computer and not be doing those precision kinds of... activities on a computer. But the big thing, and for me just in life, is there's no Command Z, there's no undo button, which is terrifying to me. You know, on the computer I can do all kinds of stuff and then I can just undo it or save a bunch of copies, or, you know, it's not... I think there's something satisfying for me that I know I need to teach myself. There's something I need to learn there about not having as much control.
That was graphic designer Gina Azari. TCA Radio Hour is brought to you in part by our local business partner, Rivera Family Funeral Home, and by the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. And thank you to KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming live at truetausradio.com. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. Have a great day.